Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is Wednesday, December 14th, and today is the last segment of Franchise Today for the year 2016. When we return after the holiday break, we will be celebrating our 8th anniversary. Several hundred shows in our archives available at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetoday, as well as on iTunes under Franchise Today. And my co-host, the ever-popular Stan Friedman, reporting live from Atlanta, writing a great event from yesterday from what I've heard and read online. Stan, welcome.
Hey, Paul. Thank you. And just point of information for those who might miss us next week or the following week over the holiday break, to the point you made, we won't be here live, but the full catalog of programming is available on iTunes and at Blog Talk Radio. So if you're feeling inclined and you're feeling moved by the moment, you won't have our melodious tones live and direct, but you can still pull up some programming and fill that hour weekly so that you don't lose the habit along the way. What do you think about that, Paul?
I think it's great, and certainly when you get tired of listening to Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, Stan or I's voice, and our voices together might go along with those hot toddies and drinks you might be enjoying.
Yeah, speaking of comic relief, right? No doubt.
Yeah.
Hey, you're right about yesterday, Paul. We had an incredible event here in Atlanta yesterday. I was proud, actually, FRM was proud to sponsor Robert Cresante's second visit to the Southeast Franchise Forum's December meeting. It's been a time-tested tradition that the chairman, not the chairman so much, the CEO and president of the IFA, has from every year for the past, I don't know, six or seven, come to Atlanta to join us for our last meeting of the year. It's a meeting that is the Southeast Franchise Forum's membership as well as the FBN for IFA members. So we had a turnout yesterday that was about 115 people. And,
wow.
And it was great. We had Aziz Hashim there as well, so it was wonderful to have the chairman and the president and CEO seated together for lunch at the same table. And then we, of course, heard comments and reflections from Robert, which we'll be able to also mirror as we talk with today's guest, as Mary Jo Larson is going to be asked to share a lot of those same kinds of insights with us as well. But it was an interesting, well-attended event. And, the highlight of what Robert talked about, amongst many things, was Trump nominating IFA board member Andy Puzder to the role of Labor Secretary. And it was an interesting reflection that Robert shared with us in that regard, too. He kind of brought up the story that we've all heard about over the past few weeks when President-elect Trump raised an eyebrow and said, "What?" when he heard that the budget for Air Force One was going to be like $4 billion. He said, "No, it's not. We need to work on that." Robert talked about Trump's landing teams. And the landing teams are the staffers that are coming into the positions that they're going to be filling in the administration underneath these cabinet appointments that are being made. And the difference between what it's like for a landing team that's the landing team of a businessman coming in with a slate of questions about things like the $4.1 billion or billion-dollar Air Force One budget, coming into positions where staffers that were bureaucrats before had a whole different set of questions. They didn't ask the kinds of questions that those that are used to working on a P&L are going to be asking. And so it's going to be an interesting thing and a big culture shock for a great many staffers that are policy people that have been in positions for years under different terms and under a different paradigm than what's happening in government. So for those who are already shaken up by Trump himself, it's according to Robert, it's nothing as compared to the ripple effects that are going to be taking place in Washington, D.C. as staff positions underneath these cabinet selections start becoming filled. It was tremendous to have Robert's insight as a former bureaucrat himself. So he sees the world through both lenses. And, yesterday the session ran over, it ran late, and nobody wanted to leave. The Q&A just kept on going. So it was a really, really wonderful event, and can't thank Robert enough for joining us and for making this possible for the IFA membership here in Atlanta. Speaking of CEOs, I want to throw a congratulations and happy holiday message to Steve Caldera, the new president and CEO of the Specialty Products Association. So Steve's back in the forefront of association management in D.C. Congratulations and happy new year and happy holidays to you, Steve Caldera. And also got to post a picture yesterday, Paul, that Robert was good enough to share with me of Matt Jay, Steve Caldera, and Robert himself at a holiday party last week in Washington, D.C. And it was just a really great-looking picture to see 3 years of IFA leadership together. I commented when I put it up on Facebook, wishing that Don DeBolt would have been in that mix as well. But really, it was a walk down memory lane to see those three faces together. And, Paul, the last thing I want to call out for the front of the house is something I picked up in the IFA Insider today, and that is heartfelt congratulations to John Reynolds. IFA's Franchise Education and Research Foundation has awarded its William Rosenberg Leadership Award this year to John Reynolds, and I can think of no one who deserves that award more.
That's great. That's great. Great front of the house. Very great front of the house. Very timely end of the year. Definitely gets everybody's juices running about the upcoming IFA convention. So
it's intimidating, though, Paul.
Anxious.
It's intimidating, though, Paul, to have to deliver news when we have the publisher of Franchise Times on the line as our guest today. A little bit intimidating.
Yes, I know that. I know that. Don't steal my thunder on this, because I got some good stuff to talk about. So here's a great quote from Mary Jo Larson, our guest today, who's the publisher of Franchise Times Magazine and Restaurant Finance Monitor. And the quote is this: controversy, Paris, porta potties, top 200, stuffed dogs, hamburgers. Only Franchise Times covers what you want to know and maybe even a little of what you don't. With that, I'd like to introduce Mary Jo Larson as our guest today. Welcome, Mary Jo.
Thank you, you guys. This is great. I really appreciate it being here. And, Paul, I had forgotten about that quote. I write so much, I sometimes forget what I write. I should be more careful, maybe, huh?
I always try to find a quote from our guest, and as Stan and us were talking about at the beginning of the show or before the show, in prep for the show, it was kind of hard to find some things. What I felt was really very timely about this, and of course we'll talk a little bit about the quote, was the cover story that month back in 2010 was actually about Andrew Puzder, who of course Stan mentioned as the incoming Secretary of Labor. So it kind of has a little bit of synergy there. The interesting thing about that about the article that you published that time was nothing comes between me and my Franchise Times. And of course, you were making reference to the provocative commercials that Carl's Jr. was very popular about in producing all the time. And of course, at that time, it was Paris Hilton clad in a tiny bathing suit and stilettos, washing a car, washing herself. And as you said, taking a big juicy bite out of a hamburger, crawling in front of a car and taking another bite of a large burger. And, of course, since then they've had, you know, Kim Kardashian. They've had a host of different starlets that have been on there. But starting the article was interesting. You started out by saying, at just Brooke Shields was about my age. And you said, stop those comparisons whirling around in your brain right now. You said, I mean it. You said I was worrying about what you were worrying about at that time, which was a pair of leg warmers you wanted to wear with, and this is a great, great vision, your flash dance ensemble to school the next day, as the definition of risque was very different from what it is today. And, of course, we do know about Brooke Shields' commercials back then for Calvin Klein jeans, and says, do you know what comes between me and my Calvins? She says, nothing. So really, what a great visual to start today's show.
I'll tell you something, Paul. I got another visual when you talked about taking a bite out of a hamburger, and I wasn't sure if you were talking about a Juicy One or a John hamburger. You know, that visual in my mind could have traveled two different ways too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, welcome, Mary Jo. It's definitely been long overdue. I know Nancy's been on a couple of times on the show, so definitely appreciate the support of Franchise Times over the year. But
you
being our guest today, I'm glad Stan and you talked, and I'm sure he did a little convincing, but I'm sure you're happy to be on the show, so I'm pleased to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Paul. He didn't have to twist my arm very hard. I always enjoy talking about franchising with everyone.
You know what
well,
we'd love
great.
To do, Mary Jones. Paul, I think I doubled up on you, buddy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it's an honor having, Franchise Times represented again. And as you had said, you know, we're talking about news, and we have the publisher of the leading franchise magazine that's out there. And we've been doing this on Franchise Today for 8 years, trying to do our part. And certainly I appreciate Mary Jo taking the time out of her busy schedule to be here today. Now it's all yours, Stan.
Well, I just wanted to ask Mary Jo to do something for us at the front of our conversation to help the audience learn a little bit more about you as the person, Mary Jo, and how you wound up in the position that you're in, and what led you to this opportunity with John Hamburger, and how you guys came together in the first place. Why don't we start with a little bit about you, the person, and then we'll kind of roll from there into the publications and your roles in them and your insights into the year ahead.
Okay, that sounds great. Well, thank you again for having me here today. I started, and I don't want to say how many years it was ago, but if I'm comparing myself to Brooke Shields in age, everybody's going to be able to figure it out. Probably, I will say, 25 years ago, I started working for John Hamburger. He had a publication, which we still have today, called the Restaurant Finance Monitor, and it covers all sorts of finance topics for multi-unit restaurant companies and senior executives, specifically in finance and real estate development. And I was the journalist on the beat for him back in those days, and that's all we had. And then we had a conference, the Restaurant Finance and Development Conference, which we still have today. So the Monitor produces that as well. And that's a chance for the lenders and the multi-unit restaurant operators to get together, simply put, and talk about their deals for the next year, get financing, et cetera. So it's a big networking event. And so I was working on that. And interestingly, we decided after a few years, you know, our restaurant finance and development conference was going so well, we decided, hey, let's see if we can do one for franchise finance, all sorts of types of franchises, not just restaurants, see what we could do there. But you really need a publication behind that to really promote it and be part of it. And we decided to go to Crane Communications, which owned Franchise Times at the time. This was back in 98. And we approached them and asked them if they would sponsor the conference. We put on this conference, you promote it, you sponsor it, we do some revenue sharing, that type of thing. They agreed to do that. And we signed all the contracts, the hotel contracts, et cetera. And lo and behold, Crane Communications shut down the publication right before our conference.
Mm.
So on the hook for, you know, our hotels and all of that, we decided to put the conference on anyway. It was fine. It did well for our first conference. And then decided, let's approach Crane Communications and see if we can buy that title. So we did. They agreed. We did. We launched it in 1999. I had no idea what I was doing. I was named publisher. And I had, like I said, had no idea what I was doing and learned a lot through the School of Hard Knocks, reading, talking to other publishers around town, that I know, got to know them in different industry segments, and we, like I said, launched it in 1999 was January 1999 was the first issue. So we've been monthly going strong ever since then.
And what an evolution it's been. I can remember in those early years, I was that's a couple or three shirts ago from me, maybe more. I was at Blimpy, I think, when I first started following.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then I traveled the world with WSI for a few years, and my companion reading was always, you know, your publication. And I just watched the way the magazine was changing, and it really took on a personality and a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think through those early years and into the early 2000s, it just became more and more important to me every week or every month. I'd look forward to it every week for the monthly issue to hit. Talk to us a little bit about how that evolution, you know, manifests. How do you help a publication develop that personality that says this is the identity, this is the niche that we've carved out for who we are and what we're trying to accomplish? Because it really is like a person, isn't it? It takes on an identity
mm-hmm.
as a publication.
It does. And one of the things that, you know, John Hamburger said, and not a career publisher himself, but a reader of business publications, is he said, I want it to be interesting. Now, that sounds kind of like, duh, of course you do. But that's harder than you think it is to do. And he wanted it to be about people. He wanted the publication. That was his mandate for all of us, and was people stories. And, you know, in the early years, we got it right and we got it wrong. And, well, and of course, all through the years, you do some things right and some things wrong. But for the most part, I think when we concentrated on the success stories and the challenges out there, people want to know how other people did it. And they want them to be honest about it. What were their struggles? What were their, you know, accomplishments? I mean, those are the people stories. We want to know, as we kind of kid around here, we want to know what they had for breakfast. And we want to be the trade publication you look forward to reading. A lot of trade publications are dry, boring. We want it to have a great people feel to it. So that was our mandate when we first started out. And as the publication has grown, I think we continue to try to find those stories that really make a difference in people's lives. They say they get something out of reading these stories about people in franchising.
And with an editor at large like Nancy Weingartner, we know that the personality is going to be one that's always going to have a smile and be fun, right?
That's exactly right. So Nancy came on board as she was a contributor. We also, way back when, bought Continental Franchise Review and folded into our staff, Janet Sparks, and then also Nancy. And Nancy was a writer from the newsroom days, you know, where she would sit, you know, before Franchise Times, she was in a newsroom reporting on stories in Southern California. And it got so we just wanted more Nancy. It just, her writing style was great. She liked those people stories, the different, the interesting. She sought those out. We're based here in Minnesota, and a couple of years after we launched Franchise Times, she moved from a contributing writer to an editor and moved here to Minnesota to take the job on full time. And we were very happy to have her do that. And, you know, it reflected her personality. The magazine reflected some of our other writers and their personalities, which is great because then you have a mix of personalities that are coming through in the magazine, and it makes it more interesting for the reader. So Nancy is now, since she's been with us, has moved on to editor at large. And that means she's our international traveler. She's doing special assignments for us. She wanted to cut back a little bit. And so we hired Beth Ewan, who's now our editor in chief. And again, new voices are coming through, keeping Nancy's voice. If you go to the back page, the inside back page, mm-hmm. I always tease my dad because he gets Franchise Times at home, and he loves Nancy's column. And I always tease him. I say, I know you read her column before you read my column. I just know it. Then he laughs. Oh, no, I read your column first. But I suspect he's reading Nancy's column first. So, you know, we still have that flavor in there. Nancy's still contributing, but she's also been charged with doing some other assignments as well. And we have a leader in Beth Ewing who is taking our staff to different heights as well in their writing assignments. So it's very fun. Very fun to see the evolution.
It is great. I have to admit that I do turn to the back of the publication first. I do read Nancy's article, and then I go through some of the people on the move and some of the announcements, and then I jump to the front. I read yours, and then I work my way to the middle. So there's my admission.
You and my dad, Paul. You and my dad.
You know, Stan, you were saying about way back when you mentioned something about three shirts and blimpies, and I actually thought you were referring to me growing three shirt sizes and calling me blimpy. But I know you were referring to something else. But I got to tell you, I was reading this article that I was referring to earlier, and all of a sudden I had a craving for a Carl's Jr. hamburger. Oh my God, the lasting impression of advertising. Certainly, Franchise Times I've heard referred to plenty of times as the People Magazine of franchising. So I appreciate the fact that you pointed out what some of the initial goals were about being about people. And it always I read a lot. I read a ridiculous amount during the course of the week. I subscribe to some 300 blogs and newsletters and spend every Saturday morning for about 6 hours just combing through them. So I read extensively. But the thing that I always marvel about Franchise Times is even though you have a lot of the same writers, even the writers throw a different spin on things. And I would imagine as you're writing continuously about the same topic, being franchising, you know, it's kind of easy to kind of get in that rut of that same voice. But it seems like every article, every issue that comes out has got a personality of its own, even beyond just the publication. I mean, every article seems to have a personality of its own. It's fun to read. I love the format of it. I love the information that is gathered out of it, both from an education standpoint, if somebody from, you know, that would be new in franchising looking at, to the most seasoned people. There always is information that is very, very, very relevant.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, Paul. We try. I mean, we try to have those people stories as well as you will see the stories about real estate, financing, you know, other topics that we put out there, legal topics that we put out there to educate as well. So we try every month to – and the deadlines, as we like to say around here, the deadline, they keep coming every month. So
it was interesting because I remember back when we were doing a little bit more with Franchise Times, where we were actually having some of our shows kind of a lineup put into the publication. And we did our first legal series back then, and I remember we called it the Legal Eagle series until we realized that, you know, Legal Eagle was Franchise Times, you know, called to action. So we're looking to revive our legal series next year because it's been one of the most popular series. But, you know, to that point, I mean, the Legal Eagle series that Franchise Times has over the year, it has just been great at showcasing, you know, some of the best of the best in the legal world of franchising. Often, you know, the legal aspects of franchising are talked about, but a lot of times the players aren't known. So I, for one, appreciate the fact that you showcase the best of the best every year, and I do look forward to that issue every year.
And it's competitive.
I appreciate that. Appreciate that.
It is competitive. Those lawyers take it really seriously.
Very seriously.
That's what I understand. And what's fun about the Legal Eagles, too, is now we're seeing some younger folks making the list. And so we're you know, I've been around for 20-some years, and, you know, there's new people coming on the list. It's really interesting.
Yep, absolutely.
So when we come back from the half break, we're going to want to talk about what's ahead and out the windshield as we move into a new era and a new administration and some of the changes that we may be hopeful for seeing as the result of that in terms of franchising. But what about the year past as we roll up to the half break? Can you give us some of your points of view on where we stand now and what you've seen? And if you were reading tea leaves and, you know, trying to predict the future based on the past, how would you share a little bit of that with our audience?
Well, it depends on how long you want me to talk here, Stan, but I would say that it's been a good year in franchising, and I can tell you more about that after the half break, but we've seen a lot of growth and growth in sectors that, you know, you can predict and you can't predict. So that it's been a good year. It's been a good year in the lending community. I personally deal a lot with the lenders in franchising. That's one of the segments because of my background with the Restaurant Finance Monitor when I first started with the company. I know a lot of lenders, and I talk to them on a daily basis. And it's a competitive world out there, and that's good for restaurant franchisees and franchisees in general to have that many lenders out there. And kind of looking into the future, I think there could be some correction. And it's been a pretty hot market for a lot of things. And I think if I had to predict and look at the tea leaves, that would be something that I would predict is a correction coming up.
Well, we'll talk more about the future when we come back. But what about the regulations and all the issues that, you know, IFA has been pounding the drums about over this past year? And you deal a lot with, actually, on the finance side. I mean, you deal with franchisors that are trying to finance everything from startups to, you know, very large ticket, multi-unit, multi-flagged operations. And so what have you seen as the result of, you know, these past many years of over-regulation and overreach and its impact on our business?
What I hear out there is from franchisees and franchisors is the worry about the regulations and what that means to their daily businesses and what that, you know, is there going to be a cooling effect on becoming a franchisee because of some of the regulations that we've been hearing about over the last year that have been in the news. And what's probably giving them some comfort is the fact that, as you mentioned, Andy Puster has been named the Secretary of Labor or has been nominated as the Secretary of Labor. And that's giving them, I think, some comfort right now that things might ease in a way that will be beneficial to them. I talk a lot to the banks, and they have what they feel is onerous regulations as well. And so I know this is making them feel better and hoping to see what's coming up will be helpful to their businesses as well.
This is Franchise Today. I'm Stan Friedman along with Paul Segretto, and we're speaking today with publisher extraordinaire Mary Jo Larson, Vice President and publisher of Franchise Times and the Restaurant Finance Monitor. Franchise Today is brought to you today by the Franchise Foundry, where their team of professionals has been bringing emerging brands to market for more than 30 years with healthy, sustainable growth, the kind of growth that only comes from experience. The Franchise Foundry provides their clients with coaching and consulting. It's a hybrid approach that fosters more effective solutions for their corporate teams and their franchisees. Franchise Foundry is rich in practical, hands-on experience and expertise in general business management, operational and change management, and is skilled and proficient in digital marketing, franchise recruitment and development as well. The Foundry team can also assist you with creating roadmaps for potential mergers and acquisitions and with the guidance needed to navigate those courses. Learn more about Paul Segreto and his Franchise Foundry, along with their expanding list of clients, at www.franchisefoundry.com. Franchise Today also brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. FRM is the only franchise-centric CRM that enables you to manage and store text messages as well as emails and enables simple collaborative communications between you and your prospective and existing franchisees. Make today the day that you give FRM a look and start 2017 assured that all of your candidate and franchisee correspondence, including emails and texts, both sent and received by anyone on your team, are all being permanently tracked and stored in candidate and franchisee records. FRM also provides state-of-the-art candidate experience for your prospective franchisees, something that's never before been available in passe virtual brochures. One last thing, unlike others, with FRM, your cloud-based software is upgraded twice a year at no additional cost to you, so you're always operating the latest and greatest version of their software solutions. No excuses, just solutions. Franchise Relationship Management on the web at frmsolutions.com.
You know, Mary Jo, over the years, what has really also impressed me about Franchise Times is the inclusion of franchisees in the publication. Within the industry, of course, we read a lot about franchisors and the brands and what's going on, and I don't think there's enough done about franchisees. And, of course, in the last year with our franchise being launched by the IFA and more stories at the grassroots level, certainly that helps. But going back some time with the Franchise Times Restaurant 200 and talking about the restaurant operators and talking about some of these individuals that have just amassed a tremendous amount of wealth based on some ridiculously high numbers. When somebody thinks about a franchise, they don't often think about, you know, this big potential. And I think that enough is not done within the industry, as you might know. I've spent the last 5 years, you know, kind of going head-to-head with American Express every year over Small Business Saturday because they continue to want to limit the amount of franchises involved in it, saying that, you know, franchisees are not basically the small business like the mom and pops. And, of course, I always argue, and we are making a lot of progress to that end with American Express as well as, you know, other entities that are out there, including, you know, government. And, of course, we saw that when the whole issue about the increase in minimum wage came about in Seattle. And then, of course, they wanted to position franchising with an unfair advantage by launching them into the higher minimum wage a year earlier than independents. So I love the fact that you write about, your publication writes about, you know, these highline franchisees in the food service sector, that really starts to open people's eyes as to the opportunities that franchise has. And some people would venture to say that, well, that kind of is proof that, you know, franchising is real business, real big business. But, of course, I always push back to the point that, you know, all of these was started by individuals with their hard-earned money, taking money out of their retirement, taking their money from someplace, and taking an entrepreneurial risk and investing it. And I'd love to see more and more of that go on, especially as we become more of an entrepreneurial society over the coming years, where a lot more people are going to be, you know, having to support themselves in a business or a freelance capacity or something like that. So what can we see down the road as far as, you know, more and more interest stories about franchisees? I mean, do you see that? Are you planning for that? And potentially, will that go out of the restaurant sector?
I think no. I think we will continue to do a lot of stories on franchisees. The franchisees are on the front lines with the customers and with the clients, and so We continue, it's the backbone of franchising are those franchisees. In fact, we've had a few, and I think this will continue, we've had a few franchisors that have started to take on what they call the asset light model, which means they are franchising and they're refranchising their corporate units back to the franchisees. So they don't own as many corporate units, and it's a trend called refranchising. And a lot has mm-hmm. been written, and we've written about that asset-light model. So franchisees are increasingly important, and they're so much a part of franchising, we will always cover them, even in the restaurant industry, in other industries. And, you know, there other industries are starting to catch up with the restaurant industry as far as having multi-unit franchisees. Some of these, there's companies like Planet Fitness, Massage Envy, their franchisees are getting bigger.
What's your take and your view on the international landscape, Mary Jo, as pertains to concepts from across the pond and all the way in Asia and coming into the U.S. and those in the U.S. looking to push out? What trends do you see and how does that look to you from both the Zor and the Z side?
That is going to continue. One of the things that we have tracked in our franchise times 200, which is the top 200 restaurant or franchises, not just restaurant, in the nation based on worldwide sales. And what we're seeing in the top 10 is like the McDonald's, the 7-Eleven, those kind of brands that make up the top 10 of our top 200, is that their international expansion increased and that they weren't doing as much. They're just tapped out here in the United States. So that's going to be, the international landscape is not going to decrease. That's going to keep happening. One of the things, I have traveled to an international franchise expo. I've traveled to the Paris Expo a couple of times. And one of the things that I learned from franchisors there about coming here is they're a little nervous, and it's because the United States is so large, and it's almost like every state is a different country. So how do you, when you say, are you coming to the United States, they get this look in their eye, and they know that it can be difficult to expand here because of the different regulations in every state. So we will continue to see that, however. We will, they'll figure it out, and we will have them coming here in increasing numbers.
Do you think that the nationalism and the way the perception of Europeans has been somewhat frightening toward a Donald Trump presidency and America First, do you think that further frightens them, or do you think that may stimulate the idea of bringing concepts and jobs with it, you know, to the USA?
Well, this the president-elect is so new that we haven't had time to really digest if that what will happen. But I can imagine that it would have a little bit of a cooling effect. Now it's going to be a wait and see with some of these franchisors on what his administration is going to expect in trade and in foreign trade. That could have, it could, there could be a cooling effect there.
So to piggyback on that, you just came off of your annual restaurant finance conference, correct?
Yes, right, November.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we talk a little bit about that conference and a little bit of what you heard as a theme coming out of that conference and some of the, I'm sure, nuggets of information that the audience would benefit from in hindsight.
You know, one of the things that is the biggest theme is the number of lenders that are out there right now. As I mentioned, that is one of the things that I do is I'm talking to lenders all the time and in franchising, and there are new lenders popping up all the time. This is great for restaurants and other sectors, the franchisees in those other sectors, because there's a lot of choice. And when that happens, that means their covenants, their loan covenants, maybe a little looser, that type of thing. There's going to be, as I said, I think there's going to be a correction. I always say what goes up must come down, and it hasn't come down yet, and I'm always amazed at, I've been doing this for so long, that it will. There will be less lenders. So if anybody's out there wanting to do a deal, now is the time to do your deal. If you're selling your company, now is the time to sell your company because there's a lot of money out there. So the other thing that I would say that we saw is the growth, the multi-unit franchisees are going to get bigger. So this year we saw, or in the last couple of years, we've seen our first $1 billion franchisee in the Flynn Restaurant Group, their Applebee's and some other concepts that they have. And those franchisees are just going to get bigger. And they're going to keep acquiring. And in some of those restaurant businesses, we're going to see the demise of the guy who has three units. I think Burger King's going to be will be doing that. We'll see them pushing for that more. I've heard that they're going to be talking about whittling it down to 200 franchisees. I haven't verified this with them, but it seems to be happening, and people are telling me about this program where franchisees, they'll have less franchisees, and that's the way they want it. Those franchisees are going to have more access to capital, and they just are going to have bigger infrastructures to be able to operate their restaurants. However, a lot of times people will tell you smaller franchisees actually run the restaurants better. And I can imagine that's true in other sectors because they're in the stores more than individual stores more. So that we saw a lot of that. There was a little bit of a sigh of relief about the election. They weren't really sure what to expect with Hillary Clinton. I think that at the time of our conference, it was the election was about a week old, and so there's still there was a little bit of a wait and see attitude, but a little bit of I think the regulations are going to start easing up on us. We actually had Andy Puzder speak at our conference. It was funny how that worked out. We had actually planned that for months, and then he's like in the news, you know, a couple of weeks later about being nominated as the Secretary of Labor. So that was kind of interesting, and he had a lot of quotes about business and regulations and talk to our audience about that.
So when you talked about brands trimming back like Burger King, would you then see those brands being, well, in the case of a Burger King, I can probably answer my own question, but I'm trying to figure out whether the era of the startup or the single unit operator is something that's going by the wayside and brands growing only with more established multi-unit and even multi-flagged operators?
I think the startups are going to, unless a brand specifically wants that startup because that's the way they want to grow, they want that person in the store all the time, I think that's where those smaller brands, those emerging brands are going to have startup franchisees. I think that's over in Burger King and those large chains. That's
right.
Over. They're not going to probably have any startup franchisees anymore. But I think that era is over. The people, franchisors, the multi-unit franchisee is an elusive person that they want to court, and because they all want them, because they have infrastructure in place, and they also have the access to capital. Mm-hmm. I mean, they know lenders. And I was talking to a lender the other day who financed a not as well-known brand, but they did it because the operator was a client and a customer that had a brand that was established. So they took a shot with this operator just because he was their existing customer. They took a shot on that brand and financing that brand for him.
Yeah, I saw some of this starting to take place. It was interesting in a Google alert that popped up a few weeks ago, an article that I had wrote, I had written, I guess about 6 or 7 years ago, talking about the rise of the QSR and some of the non-traditional type of restaurants. Of course, as we were coming out of the economic debacle of 2008 to 2012. And I think that also lends to, you know, some of the changing candidates. And I agree with you. I see the multi-unit operators, the real big operators on one side. And then I see all the way down on the other side this entry of startups. And Aziz Hashim had reported several weeks back on this show, about 52% of the franchisors that are out there have less than 20 units, and the majority of them are emerging brands, considering that there's been roughly 700 new franchise brands come into franchising over the last 2 years. But, of course, if you look at them, you see a lot of them with low investment levels, food trucks, home-based operations, as well as bricks-and-mortar locations that are on the very bottom end of the investment scale. So I think, you know, franchising is making a correction with candidates as well, and I think there's some preparation for millennials that are getting older. We have a lot of them at the upper age of the millennial that now have some financial wherewithal and looking towards franchising. And I think we're going to see some, you know, multi-generational opportunities, you know, between millennials and seniors that have the financial wherewithal and still have their health and don't want to sit there and play golf for the next 15 years. So there's definitely some changes. But the point I really want to get to is, again, another hats off to Franchise Times of hiring somebody like Tom Kaiser, associate editor of Franchise Times, who really does a great job of reporting overall, but also I love what he reports about, you know, some of these new industry segments, urban development, and, of course, millennials. And I say my hat's off because I see other publications, both in franchising and outside of franchising, that are really holding back. And I think that it's important to have that perspective because we have to prepare for that next wave of franchisees and franchisors. And what better way than to have somebody on the same eye level, so to speak. So I really look forward to great things from Tom, and I love the contributions that he's been making.
Great. Well, yes, Tom is very enthusiastic and a hardworking reporter that we hear that we have here at Franchise Times, and I love his stuff too because the minute I start reading his stuff, it pulls me in. So always, and he's great. He has great ideas, but his enthusiasm is always infectious as well.
So give us a glimpse through your crystal ball looking ahead to 2017. You guys are planning your editorial calendars or probably already have those pretty well cemented into the first part of the year. Where do you see it going in 17? What are some nuggets that you can share with some franchisors, maybe some of the emerging franchisors who aren't looking at the years of history and trend lines that we've tracked as more veterans in this business? What do you see ahead for those guys, and what can you share with them as a nugget into 2017?
Well, I think for franchisors, I think there are definitely franchising is becoming so well known. I think that there's opportunity, but there's also a lot of competition. And I think for franchisors, really, there's so much competition for the franchisees. And Stan, you probably know that as well because you're offering a product that helps them with their franchisee relationships and so and to really hone in on that and make them better and getting them into the system. And so there's a lot of competition out there with other franchises. And how do you really differentiate yourself from those? I think that is what is going to be key, is when the money starts to pull back, why is your franchise better? So for the franchisors listening, I would say that would be something you, because when this cools down a little bit, it's really hot right now, and when this cools down a little bit, I think that's what the people left standing will have to have a superior franchise that is really serving their franchisees well. And the ROI, watching the ROI for the franchisees and really making sure that that's good and good for the franchisees. For franchisees, I would say to be as well looking at those concepts that have a great ROI. We're going to do a little something different in Franchise Times this year. Just reminded me when you were talking about when we're talking about this. In March, we're having a whole new segment called the Zora Awards. We always get asked, "What's your favorite franchise?" I can't tell you how many times, and then you always have to say, "Well, what are you interested in? What kind of investment do you want to make?" I mean, there's so many questions that go into that. And so with our Zora Awards, we're going to try to answer some of those questions for people. We are going to say in this segment, these are the best franchises, and this is why. So there's going to be, and our editorial team has come up with a formula to do this, and they're already starting to pull that together for the March issue. So really what franchises are doing for their franchisees in the next year. So I would say that's something as lending becomes a little tighter, I would say that to be for both of them, to, for both segments to be looking at, you know, really who's fine-tuning their ROI and who offers the most to their franchisees. So I think that's basically for the next year. That's one of the things I would look at. Also the regulations, like I said, those are hopefully some of those regulations will be pulled back that are really onerous for the franchisees and the franchisors to do business. I think that will be helpful. And I think consolidation is going to continue, so we're going to be looking forward to that. I think if there are smaller franchisees out there listening to this, now might be your time to, if you want to sell your businesses, I think now is the time to do, might be the time to do that. And I love that you brought up millennials, because I think we should be watching them and seeing what they're doing. Some of the millennials that are sons and daughters of existing franchisees want to make their own mark. So they may not be expanding their parents' business. They may want to go do something that's their thing. So the Burger King franchisees' son or daughter may not want to be in Burger King. They might want to do something totally different. So I think that's going to be fun to watch.
That legacy piece is something I think we need to look at more closely in the coming year, Paul, and bring on some more people to talk about it. It's a huge and growing problem within our business space. And Mary Jo, before I throw it back to Paul to thank you and to close us out, I want to, for as many names as we have called out on your team today, there are three more that should be mentioned because they are public-facing, albeit not writing. But Kevin Peach and, you know, Lucas Wagner have more contact with franchisors probably than anybody else on the team. And along with them, Gail Strawn on your conference services side, three people who I think fit the bill again in terms of personality in keeping with the publication and managing relationships with people like me who have known Kevin for I can't count how many years and have come to know Gail and Lucas along the way. So the team is a team all the way around, and I'm just proud to you know, call you guys peers and friends.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, Stan, and I know those folks will appreciate the call out too, because there are a lot, like you say, they're behind the scenes, but the amount of contacts, what we've built here at Franchise Times is we try to consider ourselves a relationship business along with a publication. We form relationships in the franchise community, and that's behind the scenes as well. So I appreciate you mentioning them. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. And, Paul, I'm going to give it back to you.
Well, great show, Mary Jo. I really appreciate you being on the show with us today. Like I said, it's been a long time coming. And I think it was very timely, especially being the last show of our complete seventh year, and we'll be celebrating our eighth anniversary in January. It's hard to believe. I think back 8 years ago when I decided to launch a podcast, and I had one listener, one listener, and a lot of people said, "Oh, Paul, that had to be your mom." And I said, "No, she doesn't know how to access a computer or anything like that." And I don't know who that person was. But, you know, in the last year, we've had, you know, a couple of 100,000 people download these podcasts. And just like the information you're given today, it's great for all the, especially for all the new people coming into franchising, that we hear time after time are using this information to educate themselves on franchising. And some people are even using some of the information for, you know, training purposes and getting off on the right foot. So individuals like yourself and other great individuals in franchising dedicating and committing time to be on the show is certainly appreciated. And it's our way of giving back to franchising, and something that, you know, I've been very passionate about since day one. And I do want to reach out to, or I do want to extend that same thanks to Stan, who came to me a couple of years ago as I was kind of losing a little interest in Franchise Today and said, you know, you got something good here. I'd like to participate. We could take this to new heights. And we've certainly seen that in the last year. So thank you, Stan, for that. And it definitely reinvigorated me, and I look forward to another 8 years, and who knows, maybe it'll be more than a podcast at that time, but we'll see. But again, Mary Jo, thank you for being our guest today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul, and congratulations on your anniversary. That's quite an accomplishment.
Thank you. And just in closing, if you would just let our listeners know, you know, how – listeners could get in touch with you and learn more about Franchise Times and your publications and your conferences.
You can go to franchisetimes.com, very easy. If they would like to email me with a question, follow-up, or just comments, I'm available at mlarson, and that's S-O-N, at franchisetimes.com.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Great. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Well, Stan, not only another show on the books, but a whole year on the books. Boy, did this year fly by.
I can't tell you that I disagree with you in any way, Paul. It's amazing to me that Christmas shopping is, you know, got a few days left for me to try to sneak out and get it finished, but it's been a busy year right up to this very day. And that's something that we should all be saying grace over and being thankful for. And I agree with everything that we've heard from both Robert earlier yesterday and Mary Jo today. 2017 looks like it's going to be an even busier and more productive and active year for all of us, no matter which side of franchising our businesses face. And buckle your seatbelts and let's get ready for another great year together.
Yeah, and we're going to come right out of the holiday break 2 weeks from today. With another show. We'll be back from the holiday break. Listen in on our archive segments. But, you know, right after that, Stan, we're in Dallas at Franchise Expo South. 2 weeks later, we're in Las Vegas with the IFA convention, and boy, it's going to steamroll from there. So we're going to be busy. So definitely we need to kind of rest up our pipes and our legs and anything else on us over the next couple of weeks.
Well, you enjoy your break as I will mine, and we'll be back here again in 2017 to kick off a great new year.
So I've been wanting to say this all year. Until next year, my name is Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing called franchise. Franchise Today is out.